Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everybody, we got a great one today, you know, for a change. Tim Miller, who has joined us a couple times before, joins me again for a delightful substantive chat about politics. Tim now has taken over the Daily Bulwark podcast that Charlie Sykes had been hosting. Charlie and Tim, of course, former Republicans, or at least rabidly anti-Trump Republicans, I guess. Their main priority is defeating Donald Trump, of course, sharing the same fear that we all share, that a Trump victory would mean the, you know, end to our democracy. You'll hear Tim a number of times in this podcast. When I attempt to sort of get a feel for his politics now, where he is on, you know, tax and spend issues, those kinds of things, that all that is way down in priority, to the point where that he really doesn't care about anything other than seeing that Trump goes down, and for the reasons that we care about, like not letting Putin roll over Ukraine. I want to talk about Israel and Gaza. I always supported Israel when I was in the Senate, but was also I was a severe critic of Netanyahu's when he came to address a joint session of Congress to speak against the Iran nuclear deal. I, along with a number of others, boycotted his speech. I always felt that Netanyahu was doing everything he possibly could do to prevent a two-state solution, which I guess he openly acknowledges now. I'm not sure he was openly acknowledging that then. I've been critical of Netanyahu on this this podcast for his attempt to undermine the judiciary in Israel. And a couple months ago, I used this monologue to go after Netanyahu and Israel on the indiscriminate way in which they are conducting this war and for the humanitarian tragedy that we have been seeing unfold in Gaza for quite some time. I said then that it is especially incumbent upon us who support Israel to hold them to a standard that respects fundamental human values, and that as long as Netanyahu is prime minister, we cannot expect that. It's frankly taken too long for this administration and for other high-ranking members of Congress to speak out. We heard Chuck Schumer finally say something yesterday. I'm recording this on Friday. And I think it took the president too long. As Israel's number one ally in the world, it has been incumbent on the United States to hold it to account. We have an obligation to the people of Gaza to stop this indiscriminate killing and starvation of innocents. The way Israel has conducted this war has created a backlash against Israel that it may never fully recover from. What Hamas did on October 7th was unspeakable. Israel has a right to self-defense, and yes, Hamas embeds itself with civilians, no doubt. And I suspect that Hamas probably sees the deaths of civilians as something that helps win over world opinion. Considering what they did on October 7th, I see no limit to the depths of their depravity. So yes, I support Israel's right to exist and to prosper, but not at the cost of 30,000 plus deaths, a large majority of them innocents. Sorry to lead with such heaviosity, especially for a fun one with Tim Miller, and not just fun, but a great one, you know, for a change. The best way to learn a language, immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's convenient courses have helped me learn real-life conversation in German. For example, let's say you wanted to order soup with your dinner. Die Suppe würde mir auch gefallen. That means the soup. That means I would also like the soup. And that way, I get soup with dinner. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/franken. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/franken, spelled babbel.com/franken. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Tim has just gotten the designation to do the Bulwark regular daily show, right?
Daily Bulwark podcast. Every day, every afternoon it comes out. It's an interview show. We're working on some bits, as we discussed, you know, where I can do some little rants of the day and things of that nature.
I was giving advice to the young lad here. When I did Air America Radio in the, what year was that? The
1842, I think.
2003. I started that, did it for 3 years. You're on for 3 hours a day. You're doing an hour a day, basically, right?
1 hour, yeah.
Yeah. But when you, same thing. There's no pressure when you're doing it every day. When you do once a week, what I do, that's hard. Once a week.
It's possible that the Bulwark podcast audience may be a little more discerning than the Air America 2003 audience. I don't know. They didn't know what they didn't know back then. You know, there's a lot of podcasts out in the market space today. You know, they can just flip on over.
There are. I was going to, when I first decided to do a podcast, I wanted to do it on cuts of beef. But I learned that there are already 8 just on brisket alone. So
you don't want to compete on the brisket charts.
No, so I decided to do politics and current affairs, which you do, and you do marvelously, my friend.
Thank you, Al.
Yeah.
It was a parting gift from Charlie Sykes, the great Charlie Sykes, to me, was that I got to start on Lundi Gras. I moved to New Orleans. This is my first year living in New Orleans. And so I had to start the podcast on Lundi Gras. And my second podcast was on Mardi Gras, James Carville. It was a wonderful episode. We got dressed up, and a lot of creeps on the internet asked why we were dressed so weird, you know, because they don't celebrate. It's just Tuesday everywhere else. Everybody else in my life was drunk, and I was churning away on the new daily podcast, but it was worth it. I'm happy, and it's been a good month, and we're finding our sea legs. We had Evan Osnos this week talking about his big New Yorker profile.
Mm-hmm.
It's been fun.
He did a profile on somebody.
Biden, the big Biden profile. People were chatting about it. You might have heard about it. You know,
you know, when you're only doing one a week, you're just missing.
You don't
stuff
have to care
all,
about it
all over the place. How is that profile?
It was good. I mean, there's some concerns in the Never Trump world, I guess maybe even some Democratic strategist world, because, you know, Biden is confident. I know you got to know him very well. Mm-hmm. He's confident maybe to a point of overconfidence. And some of the quotes in the magazine article were about how they think polling is broken, so not worried about the polls.
Oh.
And Donilon was out there talking about how that democracy, this is going to be just a democracy election. And, you know, I'm concerned about democracy, and I think that he should talk about it. But there's I don't know. I want terror and steep concern in the Biden high command. I want aggressiveness.
Anything that reeks of overconfidence is just scary.
Yeah, so it's a little scary given the nature of the threat. But, you know, on the other hand, Evan, wrote about a book about Biden too, and so I think has a good sense of him. And I like Biden's bent continues to be right, and like he's continued to make the bet on the way that he sees the world versus the way that Trump sees the world. It worked in 20, it worked in 22, and there's something to be said for that. But you know, I could use a little bit of antsiness.
There's antsiness because I think of the age, and age wasn't the same kind of issue even 2 years ago. It's just there's no question that he seems older. His gait is stiff, which to me is the least of anything. I mean, think about FDR's gait, non-existent.
Right.
The gait is not important. And evidently, I've had a doctor say to me, when you get older, your ligaments can get stiffer. That happens with some people.
It has nothing to do with the brain, but people notice it. People notice it.
People notice the gait. But the brain, I thought the State of the Union was great. But the polling on it was very similar to last year's State of the Union, which was very similar to the what he did in the speech, which was he talked back to them. And I thought it was very strong.
I felt as, you know, from the Never Trumper world, I felt very seen by the State of the Union speech. And he starts off with Ukraine and a Reagan quote. Mm-hmm. You know, so I felt like we were in business. Very rarely do you see a president give a State of the Union that is so tailor-made to kind of reach out to a minority faction of the other party. But I felt like they were very intentional about speaking to Nikki Haley voters in that speech, just by the way that the speech was. And you could start with anything, right? You could start with climate. You could start with, like, there's a million things you could start with.
Well, when you're doing Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall,
it's pretty clear who you're talking to, my people.
Yeah. I mean, and that is the opposite now of these Republicans who are isolationists.
Yeah.
Which is scary. That is scary.
It is scary. And but I think it provides an opportunity. I mean, generally foreign policy, you know, with the exceptions of 9/11 and other exceptions of, you know, the Iraq war for Obama in 08. But a lot of times these more are, you know, the fate of NATO does not tend to be the main issue that voters decide on in an election. But I do think there's a subset of Republican voters who never really liked Trump, who are very passionate about this. And Trump has made this contrast for Biden, right? I mean, by making his comments about how Putin can just do whatever the hell he wants if NATO countries don't pay, and you know, by saying, you know, we're not going to fund Ukraine. And
also, have NATO countries not been paying of late? I mean, I think they have been. I think it was...
He doesn't understand how NATO works. He thinks it's like a country club. Like, still after all these years, he thinks it's like a club where you pay your dues. And it's not like there's a piggy bank. You know, it's like the thing is, like, NATO countries have to spend a certain amount on defense, and they are, like, the Germans are spending a ton now,
and the Poles are as well, and of course they are, because they're next, right?
They're Poland's concerned.
Poland's next.
So I think that Biden has an opening. Is this a ton of voters? No, but in a close election, as you know, if you think about Atlanta suburbs, Phoenix, the John McCain type voters that he's going to need, you know, they do care about this, and for him to start the speech with that, with Ukraine, righteous defense of Ukraine, saying, I will not bow down to Putin, and then going into democracy January 6th. They knew who they were targeting with that, and hopefully we'll see a little movement. We don't have a ton of polls since then, so we don't really know.
Are we going to fund Ukraine in the next few weeks?
I'm worried about it. I don't think so. I mean...
Well, is this about Johnson worrying about calling a vote in which Democrats will vote for the funding, and then he will be called on? All you need is one, right?
Yeah. Well, look, we're recording this on Tuesday afternoon. Ken Buck, a Republican from my original home state of Colorado yeah, just resigned. Yeah. So they're down to 218. These guys couldn't pass anything. Like, at 218, that, you know, they couldn't name a post office after Trump. I mean, they really can't do anything. The Republicans are not, this is not a governing majority anymore.
Well, Ken Buck would have been one of the no's on that.
Well, so on that maybe, vote, I guess that's true.
So maybe,
maybe the wrong example.
Maybe they could.
So Mike Johnson, to pass anything, needs Democrats. Sure as shit, to pass Ukraine funding, he's going to need a lot of Democrats, probably more Democrats than Republicans. And so if you do that, you know, if you put up a vote where you get more Democrats than Republicans on Ukraine, you're liable to be staring down the barrel of Kevin McCarthyville, where they kick you out. And so I think he's worried about that. He doesn't want Mr. Trump to be mad at him. That's the thing that he cares about the most, I think, staying in his job and keeping Trump happy with him. And so they got a discharge petition going around now,
right,
which gets around Johnson.
You need 218. You just, a discharge bill takes a certain amount of time to ripen or something like that.
Yeah, it does. And it's tough because the straight, you know, the one with the deal that includes immigration, on each version of a discharge bill, there's going to be some segment of members of Congress that aren't going to go along with it. So I'm hopeful. It also runs up against government funding. And there's going to be another government shutdown cliff in a couple of weeks. So Johnson is in way over his head and is juggling all this. I remain hopeful that they'll figure out some way, either by going around him or by him, I guess, maybe getting one more pass before they kick him out of the speakership. They cut some sort of deal, but I don't think it's a guarantee at all.
Is he way over his head because he's way over his head and doesn't know what he's doing, or is he way over his head because he's in this unbelievably precarious position?
Both. He was a backbencher. This was not, Mike Johnson is not a skilled legislator who came up with this. He was a guy that I think, now I find this gross that he did this, so I'm not complimenting his choice to make this kind of sacrifice. But the one thing that he was deft at was he was more of the religious, evangelical, Rick Santorum type of conservative. And then Trump comes around and he kind of deftly pivoted into the MAGAville, right? At where still the social conservatives still liked him and respected him. You know, he sucked up to Trump and went along with the Stop the Steal stuff. So the MAGA folks did, but he doesn't seem so crazy. He's not like out there doing Lauren Boebert stuff. So like the quasi-normal old school Republicans also think he's fine, right? So he ended up just being, you know, like the porridge that was just right in this Congress of no, there was no reason for anybody to hate him. But he didn't get the job because he's like a skilled legislator.
He came at the end of a number of votes where they were looking ridiculous. So the timing was good when it got to him. It was like, we're looking really bad.
Right.
We've got to elect somebody and we might as well do it unanimously. And that'll show something. That'll show. Yeah. And then it's Mike Johnson.
Yeah. And then a lot of the guys are mad. But the guys who are, you know, legislators have been around, the Steve Scalises of the world and McCarthy's old people, they're pissed at him. So they're not helping him, right? You could imagine a situation where McCarthy retired and, you know, he has his guys around him that help Johnson kind of figure out the lay of the land. That's not happening, right? So he's in way over his head. And he's also in a situation that is ungovernable for anybody, as we saw from McCarthy.
I was fascinated with him during the State of the Union. I thought that Katie Britt stole the night, but
she really did.
I was watching Johnson, and sometimes he applauded like under the desk, which I thought was interesting, but I thought he applauded for Ukraine funding. So is that where he is? Do we know where he is on that?
Yeah, he was kind of doing the Larry David Curb Your Enthusiasm meme, you know, where he's like going, maybe, I don't know, should I clap for Ukraine? It was a little bit of clapping. Kamala was standing, the vice president was standing, he wasn't, but he did some clapping. My sense from the people that I talked to in Republican world that talked to him is that in a vacuum, he would be for it. Right. Like if there was no political pressure or implications, he'd be for it.
Now, this is funding for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan.
Yeah. The weapons element of it, at least. Right. Making sure they have enough weapons. I think that, you know, there's some complaints from in Republican world about not giving them cash because whatever, they think Zelensky's a gangster or whatever. But at least the weapons he would be for. But even we do have to do that. They need it. They need it now.
They need it now. And by the way, the money we spend stays here because we're the ones making these armaments. There is that part of it. There's also the part of it is, holy shit, this is a great advertisement for our weapons. You know, right. It's like, well, like, also, wow, we're getting new that weapons. American missile. That did, wow, did that do a great thing. Woo!
I don't know about the advertising side of things, but I do know that we're getting new, like actual military folks, if you talk to them, like Adam Kinzinger, a fellow Never Trumper, who's a military guy, cares about these issues deeply, knows them better than me. I get my fingernails manicured and stuff, so this is not my area of expertise exactly, mm-hmm. But his point is like, not only are we investing this money here, but we're getting new weapon. Like some of the stuff that we're giving them is, you know, the old model, like the old iPhone model. We're updating it now. So, I mean, it really, there really is no argument against it, except for that Donald Trump is basically a Putin puppet and doesn't want to do anything that would help Zelensky and help the Ukrainians, who he thinks screwed him on impeachment one. Like that, this is all about Donald Trump's narcissism. Like it's not, there's not really any substance.
We should definitely make the case that no American soldiers are in there. There are some Americans who have volunteered, yes. But no, none of our military is at danger. And we are advertising our weapons to the world. I know that sounds, I don't know, mercenary, but it is. But really, hey, those American weapons are really good. I think I'd like some. So this is actually win-win in many ways, including not losing to Russia in the Cold War or the new Cold War.
I feel like I'm in a strange world, though, as somebody that was a Republican that always thought that you guys were too weak-kneed and wimpy on this stuff. And like I'm watching the State of the Union and Vice President Harris is shooting up to applaud with fervor, you know, for making sure we kick Putin's ass. And we got, who was it? The New Jersey congressman is wearing a Ukraine flag. And I do kind of feel like I'm in the upside down, that none of my old people are even clapping for standing up to
it
Russia.
It is upside down. I mean, it's you guys strange. Are totally upside down. I mean, there was an element of the Democratic Party, you know, the Henry Jackson part of the party, the Humphrey part of the party, I guess, and others that were guns and butter, you know. But on this one, there's no question. This is Russia. This is Russia. This is communist Russia. This is Putin attacking a European nation and trying basically to eliminate it. This is extinguishing the Ukrainian people. It's brutal what he's doing. It is genocide. That, you know, Ann Applebaum has called this genocide. And when they take over a town, they round up who, they figure out who's supporting Ukraine. They torture him, they kill him.
It's so sick.
And we're
really
on the wrong
sick.
Side.
It's such a no-brainer.
I mean, yeah. Trump is on the wrong side. And I love
the weak link in the whole Western world. Forget the Democrats. It's like the French, the Germans. I mean, everybody, you know, the Trumps, that's the whole preposterousness of the whole, oh, they're not contributing to NATO. It's like, what are you talking about? The Europeans are the ones that are holding the line right now while we're dithering. In the entire Western world, it's the American Republican Party that is the weak link on standing up to Putin's aggression. It's crazy.
I saw Johnson applaud enough over the table a couple times and under the table a couple times for that I'm really hoping that soon this happens. But I don't know what his calculus is in terms of taking a certain kind of vote that gets him ousted. Like McCarthy. So, but you should wait. You're with the bulwark. You have more ins to Republicans, don't you, or not?
Well, it depends. I mean, there a lot of them are leaving. You know, a lot of them are self-deporting. You know, Mike Gallagher, congressman from Wisconsin, self-deported. Mitt is. So, you know, we have ins with a few of them. And then there's another category of Republicans that actually hate us more than you guys because we're traitors.
Yeah.
And so in some senses, we get particularly poorly treated, which is fine. I wear their scorn as a badge of honor. But yes, I mean, at least at a staff level, you know, we have relationships and I'm able to talk to them. But I guess my point is, I can't provide you with any intel on what the Republican House strategists are thinking on the Republican side, because they don't know. They don't know. Jake Sherman doesn't know. He's got a better end with them than I do. You know, he's sourcing up with them every day over at a punch bowl because they don't have a strategy. Like Mike Johnson is trying to survive every day. And, you know, there's a lot of ins and outs and what have yous. And you don't know what Donald Trump's going to say on any given day. I mean, they were planning on pushing this TikTok thing through. And then Trump throws a wrench in the process because some rich guy, you know, gives money to a pro-Trump super PAC, right?
Yeah. How dangerous is this that he owes $500 million? That, oh, I see, whoever wants to give him $500 million pretty much, you know, has carte blanche with the new administration if he wins.
It's pretty dangerous.
Yeah, isn't that pretty dangerous?
Yeah. He was showing nuclear sub material to a random Aussie billionaire at Mar-a-Lago. That came out from the the whistleblower report on the classified documents case.
Well, speaking of which, did you see her today?
I did.
You did?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
You know, he didn't make any new news, which I think was good for Joe Biden. I don't know that I was fully on board with the Democratic view that they were pushing that he was some Trump plant. If he was a plant, he was doing a pretty poor job of it. To me, this guy kind of seemed like a naive partisan government official. I did not think that his testimony was particularly compelling. I thought that Ted Lieu, really, a Democrat out of California, really cornered him on the differences between the Trump case and the Biden case in a very succinct way. I'd recommend watching that on social media if you haven't.
What did you think of Adam Schiff's?
Yeah, the Schiff getting...
Schiff's was good.
Yeah, I think that Schiff was kind of like, are you naive? Are you dumb? And I think that in Schiff's mind, he was saying there's no way this guy could be that naive to think that this
And
report,
I think he's right.
You do? I'm not sure. I think that maybe he was that naive.
You don't have to go out of your way to go, he's like an old doddering man or however, whatever his language was, yeah. It was 2-2, wasn't it?
I think that was intentional, but I don't know that he realized the shitstorm that he was going to create with it. I don't know that he and if he
I
wanted
think it was
to
intentional,
today
though.
Okay, so then I guess that's what I'm saying. If it was intentional, if he wanted to today, he could have leaned into it. He could have just been more blunt and said, hey guys, I don't know what you're talking about. The guy seemed really doddering to me. He shuffled in. He couldn't remember whether it was 2015 or 2017. You know, he could have been a little more flip.
They had the transcripts. So they had the transcripts. So,
and the transcripts were pretty damning.
Damning to Biden?
To her.
Yeah, to her. That's what I thought.
Because Biden remembers the date of Beau's death, for example, but then he doesn't remember the year. And so it's all more complex. Like reading the transcript, it's pretty interesting. Like it paints a much more complex picture than her painted, of course, in the report. And it's like a guy that's making some jokes and then he's not remembering things and then they're serious.
And he's juggling like lots of dates. It's like, okay, this is when I was writing the book and this is when my son was sick. And this is when I was no longer a vice president. And this was when, you know, that happens. And it didn't seem like a doddering old man. It seemed like a guy who had a lot of stuff crashing around his brain in trying to answer truthfully.
I think that's right. Mike, I guess my point though is like the error did come out of the balloon of the Her report. I don't think there's going to be any ads about it. So it kind of turns out to be kind of a nothing burger. I guess my point is though.
Except you got to see how awful the Republicans were, didn't you?
Yeah. But do we need to be like, okay, I guess.
No,
is that breaking news now that the Republicans are awful? Yeah, they were pretty awful.
No, but isn't it like, do you ever root for seeing them be awful?
I was rooting for Katie Britt to never stop talking. So I do, I was riveted by Katie Britt. I was like, I wanted to take a weed gummy and just have it go on for 3 hours, get a popcorn. And just dig in.
That would have been
really good.
Sweet if that wish could have come true.
I know, because every minute of it I savored. It was so bad.
And you watched it live.
I did. It live. And it was bizarre. Did you watch it live?
I watched it live. I think it might have been pre-recorded, but I watched it live in terms of when it was broadcast.
I was trying to think back to like other times where I've been watching a political thing live and been that uncomfortable.
No.
And, you know, I was thinking like the Mark Sanford press conference, maybe when he did the Appalachian Trail or some of those. But there's never been, I think it's the worst political speech I've ever seen. So it's not a debate or it's not you're struggling with questions in an interview. It's like she got to...
It made you go through all the different highlights of these. And the Marco Rubio one.
Way better.
Is way better in one respect. I mean, it was all about that one move.
Right.
And it was the stupidity of that move, which is, oh boy, I'm thirsty. Oh man, I got dry mouth. Oh boy. Oh boy, what do I do? Oh boy. I got to figure this out. Oh boy. I'll go as fast as I can to get it and bring it back.
And then I'm going to look at the camera like a scared deer in the headlights while I do it.
Yeah, as opposed to, hey, everybody, I'm thirsty. I'm going to mosey over here, get this water and drink from it, and then sit down again and say, continue with my speech. Then it would have been nothing.
That's true. But as a whole, you know, because I was just worried I had recency bias and the whole thing. I don't know about you, but I the Trump thing, you know, sometimes has me feel like I'm in the Bermuda Triangle on whether my political antenna is right. So I'm watching the Brit thing. I'm watching with my husband, and we're and he's like curled up in a ball. He's so uncomfortable watching her. And I'm like texting everyone. I was like, this is as horrible as I think, right? Like, this is embarrassing. But I'm not 100% sure. But so then to check myself, I went and rewatched Jindal and Rubio, which are the other two.
Right.
There have been a lot of bad responses, but those are the two that get mentioned. And both of them were just kind of like gentlemen C's compared to what the Katie Britt thing was. I mean, the fake crying. I literally thought that it was like a Scream movie. Somebody's going to jump out with a knife at one point. The way that it was shot, the camera slowly moved. It was bizarre.
I immediately thought of a drama teacher in either high school or college that taught a class and you did your term paper was doing a performance. And that's what I thought. I just thought this was a
What was the prompt for the performance from the drama teacher?
The prompt was, you're acting now. You're acting. And we want to really convince people that you feel these emotions.
Okay.
And we want them them to feel it too. Feel what you're feeling.
Did you ever watch Barry, the show Barry?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, like they have those terrible actors that he teaches, Henry Winkler teaches.
Yes.
It felt like that to me. But the professional actors are acting or are pretending to be bad actors in the show. And it felt a little bit like that.
You can't help being someone in show business who had been in show business, looking at this and going like, what was the chief of staff saying? Was the chief of staff saying, that is unbelievably powerful, Katie?
I'm moved.
Don't change a damn thing. And she's just going like, I just wish Mrs. McNamani could see this, but she's gone. And if she could see this, she would be so proud of me because I said, we see you. We feel you. And it was like creepy, but hilarious at the same time. And then now I haven't seen her appearances the next day.
I have.
What were those like?
She talks normal again. I mean,
well, of course she
does
talks
the
normal.
Trump era thing now, where, you know, back in the good old days, you'd say, you know, I overscripted myself on this one, but what really matters is the issues, right? You do one of those sort of things, mm-hmm. but you can't in Trump world, that's over. You know, you can't apologize. You can't show any weakness. You know, admitting failure is a failure. That is the number one law of politics in the MAGA party. And so she has to do the thing where she's like, the liberals, the media, you know, is always out to get me kind of thing. And she refuses to give an inch on the lies. I mean, she lies. She tells this story where she's pretending to cry, talking about this woman who'd been raped. And the story's real and it's a sad story. But like it happened in Mexico in 2004 or 2006 or something. And so she's pressed on that on Fox. A rare moment of journalism happened on Fox where they asked her about it. Even then, you know, she doesn't. She can't. She refuses to give an inch and say, well, I was just kind of saying this is the type of thing that's happening under Biden. It's like, what?
And I talked to an adult woman and that this happened when she was 12. So it couldn't possibly have happened during Biden. I saw a little clip of that.
Right.
And I went like, No, you can't. That doesn't work because people aren't putting that together. People aren't solving a mystery.
Right. The whole context of the remarks was about what's wrong with Biden. It was a response to Joe Biden.
There goes her vice presidential
aspirations
for the next 12 or so, 16 years, probably.
Yeah.
But, you know, God bless her.
Maybe that's a win, though, for her. Right.
Yes.
Unintentional victory, I think. Not being.
Who do you think the vice? Who do you think his running mate will be?
You know, I don't like, I think that he is going to care about loyalty first and foremost, and he cares about the look.
You know, I think you're right about the look. That's why I think it's Kristi Noem.
Yeah, the problem is, and I want to be careful here. She put out a video of her as like a, she's endorsing a company that does dental work. She's talking about her new teeth.
Oh.
And she does, she's doing like an infomercial.
Really?
It's very strange. It's almost, it's so strange. It's almost like she's intentionally trying to remove herself from the VP stakes.
Norm Coleman actually did something like that when I was running against him. He got a new set of teeth,
yeah,
a new set of choppers.
Yeah.
And I think he got the work done for free if the doctor, if he could show it proudly.
So maybe she took a page out of Norm's playbook. So I don't know. That's pretty weird. Yeah, I don't know. That's why the Noem thing has just never felt quite right. Elise Stefanik really fits the part, but I don't know about looking the part. You know, Trump is, yep, Trump is going to want somebody. And so part of me is just like, does he really just fall back on J.D. Vance? Does he actually care that much about having it be a woman? J.D. Vance is right in line with him. He is totally submitted to Donald Trump in every way. He's got like a little bit of a Hollywood sheen because he, you know, they did the Netflix movie. Right. He looks the part in the way that Pence does. He's not handsome, but he like looks like a vice president, has a young family. I don't. Part of me just keeps coming back to Vance. I look at all the other candidates.
Okay, I still got my money on Noem.
Okay.
I just think it's looks, but we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Mace is really trying hard. I got to tell you, if you want to give an award for the person who's trying the hardest to be Donald Trump's VP, Nancy Mace out of South Carolina.
She had a Stephanopoulos moment, right?
Yeah, the whole Stephanopoulos moment is just, she's putting on this huge performance. I mean, Trump didn't like she was again, like she was not a never Trumper, but a Trump skeptic. And she's done a full flip, ostentatious support of Donald Trump now. They all kind of do it, but she's just really leveling it up on how ostentatious it has been. She goes on Stephanopoulos and she like makes this whole stink about how he's shaming her by asking her a simple question about how she could support somebody that has been adjudicated to have committed sexual assault. And Trump noticed it, obviously, because he mentions it in that little truth post that he sent about, you know, the Jimmy Kimmel read on the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. She's trying really, she's trying the hardest, but I don't know if he trusts her.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust someone that's that out there trying that hard. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with Tim Miller, new host of the Bulwark Podcast.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation, and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant eraser foundation.
So what do you guys, let's define the bulwark for me.
Sure.
And I think I know what it is. It's never Trumpers who are Republicans who have gotten together. It's Bill Kristol and Charlie Sykes, and you know, we have to keep them separate from Lincoln Project guys, Are there overlaps? Are there people that are in both?
Yeah, no. I mean, the Lincoln Project guys have written for us and been on the shows and stuff. And look, the Lincoln Project is doing a super PAC. I think everybody's got a role here. They're running an actual PAC that, you know, runs these ads and all that. Like, the Bulwark is a media outlet. It started as the Weekly Standard got shut down because the riot, and that's where Bill Kristol was and others. He wanted to speak out against Trump and the owners, the overlords, corporate overlords, shut it down and wanted full fealty to Trump. And so the Bulwark kind of sprouted out of that. So it was originally all Never Trumpers. As we've kind of grown, you know, we're trying to expand into, you know, also include the center left and kind of the broad center. We brought in Will Salatin, who's been a long time center left guy over at Slate. And, you know, I think we're trying to find a place and a home for people that are former Republicans or still hoping the party's going to get better, hoping it's hope. I don't share that hope, but,
I want to ask you about your politics. Because I just wonder how much of the old Republican Party you once believed in and also still do.
Yeah.
For example, like I'll try to find an area where I think you might still believe, like deficits, right? Are you a deficit, not a hawk, but do you have a different approach to deficits than, say, a liberal Democrat might have, or than a very, very conservative Republican might have?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty concerned when I look at the deficit charts. I was always a moderate Republican, right? And so I was always center right. I worked for John Huntsman and John McCain and Jeb Bush. Okay, those were my types of candidates. And so in a lot of ways, there's the whole, did I leave the party? Did the party leave me? It's like, well, I don't know. I mean, a little bit of both, right? There have been certain things where I've kind of reflected on my views and other things. John McCain, if you look at 08, what did he run on? He was for immigration reform. He thought climate change was a problem. You know, he was for American strength. He supported NATO. He supported the rule of law. So, like, there are a lot of things that the party doesn't, that the party's changed on. But there are other things that I've kind of reflected on, guns, for example. But, you know, I don't know. Like, I think we could have a pretty heated fight on regulatory reform. I just don't think that's important. Like, that's the most important thing right now. But I look at the Democrats. That's the thing where I get the most frustrated. It's like, I lived in California for a while. It's like, they can't build a train. They can't build houses. You have to get an environmental review on everything. I look at this CHIPS Act. There's just a report out that some of the factories that we're supposed to be building aren't getting built because of requirements. Some diversity, equity, inclusion requirements. I'm for certain DEI. I'm not like a crazy Elon far right person on this, but I think it should be reasonable, and like, we should be able to build stuff.
How are you on like taxes, like the tax brackets? Because I feel like people at the very top are not being taxed enough, and that our code is written with the help of lobbyists and very wealthy interests.
I think we basically agree on that. I think I'd fit in the center on this. The Joe Biden tax proposal is not that offensive to me. If we want to tax people making over 400K a little bit more, I just think that's the least important deal in the world right now. I it's hard for me to care about it. When I talk about it changing my views, this, the one thing I've changed my views on that has nothing to do with Trump, I guess it has to do with Trump in this sense, is in 2016, back when I was still doing more activism and not media, I was going around to millionaires and rich guys and trying to ask them to give me money to try to help run ads for the various groups that were trying to stop Trump. And, you know, the more rich people you meet, the less you start to care about what the top tax bracket is. I do have to tell you, there are a handful of super impressive rich people, but there are also quite a few that were in the right place at the right time, and God love them for that. But I don't care that much about that.
So doesn't that make you want to increase the top tax?
Yeah, sure. I don't know. Yeah, we can increase the tax bracket a couple points. I guess this is my point now. Like, right now, of all of the issues, like, who cares? Like is the top tax bracket 34, 38, 42? I'm just not going to spend 1 minute talking about this. I'm just not going to spend a single minute talking about this. To me, that seems like the 280th most important issue. I'm sure we could find some things. We could argue about abortion, which week. That at least seems important to me. There is real impact to that on people's lives, on women's lives, on the child's life. So I'm sure we could find some places to disagree, but the tax bracket, top tax bracket's not going to be it.
Where you spend your money says a lot about your values, and You can either spend money on certain kinds of programs and not tax a lot and run a big deficit, or you can tax a lot and not run as big a deficit. So
I guess. Is that really true, though? I mean, look, my favorite politician in America right now, so it'll tell you where my politics is the governor of Colorado, is a Democrat, Jared Polis. Sure. But he's a pretty center-left Democrat. He's a capitalist Democrat. Taxes in Colorado are pretty low. I think services are pretty good in Colorado. You looked at California. Taxes are pretty high in California. I think services are pretty bad. So I don't know. You know, when I think about my Republican views, that's why I say like the tax rate isn't as important to me as I think government should be responsive. I think it shouldn't be bloated. We should let the market work. We should also have a social safety net, you know? And so I think that's where a lot of people in the center are. Yep. Some center left Democrats, some center right Republicans, some independents. That's what I care about more. If you tell me, okay, if we tax 2% more than we can pay, then we can actually have functioning government services that help poor people, that help marginalized people, I will be like, sure, Al, I'm for that. If we're going to pay 2% more to pay for a train to nowhere, I'm probably going to be a no on that.
Well, we should have trains that go all over the place.
Well, we should be able to build them, though.
And we should be able to build them.
California spent like billions of dollars on a train that hasn't even been built, that doesn't have any hope to be built.
But the rest of the world has these trains.
So, you know, we need to be able to like do stuff. You know, we need to be able to do stuff, I think. And I think that sometimes government and bureaucracy get in the way of that. So that's this. Now you're getting my Republican out. That's where you can find my vestigial Republican passions.
Well, Japan and Europe can do these things, so we should be able to do them in terms of high-speed rail and that kind of stuff. But
I think the last time you had me on, we argued about WOTUS. So you're always looking for some random issue. We're always finding one random thing we can disagree on to make us like kind of remember the good old days where you could just disagree on a substantive policy issue.
Waters of the
U.S. Worry that the other person wants to be an autocrat.
Yeah, Waters of the U.S. was and farmers were against it because it was the way they used the water on their land was being regulated by the Department of Agriculture. And and you're in New Orleans now, right?
I am in New Orleans.
Well, you should care a lot about Water of the U.S. because it all goes down there and then it starts eating away at your coast and then you'll be swallowed by a hurricane. All because you didn't care about Waters of the U.S.
I am concerned about that. I'm a little bit more concerned about the fact that in my new city that the pumps aren't working because the local government seems to be incompetent. So I think that we should focus on building an infrastructure. And I love that about the bipartisan infrastructure bill. We should focus on building and less on red tape and on regulating farmers. That's just me.
Yeah. But you also want to, you know, save critters that are dying out, you know?
Critters and how much hedge fund guys pay in taxes are both kind of towards the bottom of my concern list.
I don't know. Species.
I know everybody's got to have priorities.
You got to save our species if we're going to have a healthy world.
I do care about species.
Yes. Well, that's what
Mitt Romney wanted to, varmints. Oh, no, it wasn't critters. It was varmints that he talked about hunting. When he was pretending to be a hunter, he was like, I do some varmint hunting. I thought it was critters.
I think I remember that. Well, you guys keep up the good work over there at Bulwark.
Thank you. We're doing our best, and hopefully, you know, we can give people no BS. I think the nice part about it is we're not, you know, being freed from the shackles of having to pretend and having to do party talking points. I think he's let us be no bullshit. And everybody, one thing everybody at the Bulwark is on the same page about, some things we disagree on policies, but we all do not want a racist buffoon to turn America into an idiocracy or an autocracy. So I think we're all very aligned on that mission this year.
Yeah, well, we have that in common. We all do. Well,
I love that.
Except for the people who don't. And that
they're probably not listening.
Then they're not listening. Maybe somebody. No, they're not listening. Oh, why'd you say that?
Sorry. Maybe one of them. Maybe the listeners have friends who they can reach. You know?
Maybe they're stuck tentacles. In a car with somebody who's who's listening. Well, anyway, thanks for doing this, and good luck on your daily show now.
Thank you. And I'm going to take your advice. We're going to start with some bits. And any time the listeners complain about my new bits, I'm going to blame you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
The early 2000s was a wild time for reality TV. There seemed to be an endless supply of shows that delivered entertainment for us, but trauma for children. I'm Misha Brown, the host of Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop. Each week on The Big Flop, comedians join me to chronicle the biggest pop culture fails of all time and try to answer the age-old question, who thought this was a good idea? We recently looked behind the scenes of what was really going on at Abby Lee Miller's dance studio. Abby's biggest misstep wasn't screaming nonsensical catchphrases or throwing chairs on television, but instead, she was choreographing financial fraud in plain sight. Join me to break down all the wild details of Abby Lee Miller's story. Follow The Big Flop on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Big Flop early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.